Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Red Fox Blogger with your host, Kel Fritzy. She's the infidel your imam warned you about, and there's no holding her back as she shares her opinions, insights, information, and outrage discussing the political entity known as Islam. We are at a critical juncture in our history, and if the threat of Islam is not faced up front, right now, then we will lose the freedoms of individuality, civic justice, and autonomy of thought we rightly enjoy, and instead see our values replaced with kinetic and civilizational jihad, Sharia law, and oppression permanently. Don't let the memory of our soldiers, past and present, go in vain. It is up to us to protect the legacy for which they fought so hard. We have an obligation to honor their memory today and for future generations. Join Kel Mondays at 3 p.m. Eastern and Fridays at 7 p.m. Eastern on Blog Talk Radio. But leave your political correctness well away from her phone lines and chat room. And be warned, Kel takes no prisoners.
GoDamnMedia.com.
Changes.
We are justified in doing anything we can to survive.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Red Fox Blogger with your humble host, Kel Fritzy. There's a lot of material we have to cover tonight, and as you know, Islam never sleeps, and neither do we. I am a very proud counter-jihadist, and tonight I want to talk to you about the apostate and why you should love the apostate. There is so much about Islam, it makes your hair curl, literally. The fatwas on the heads of an apostate when they leave the religion, so-called religion. If you listen to the Red Fox Blogger long enough, you know what I think of Islam in terms of its label, religion. It's not a religion. It's a political entity with a global determination to overtake us all. It's a real threat in the Western world. I understand that there are Muslims who do not agree with everything that's in the Evil Green Book, a.k.a. the Quran. However, if they are followers of the Quran, if they're the followers of the dictate, they're, in my books, they're Muslims, and they too should be taken to task. They should be pointed out, and they should be told that you're not welcome. You're not welcome in my society. You're not welcome in the West unless you walk away from that political party. You want to join the West? Quit following a false god. Quit following a false prophet. Muhammad went up to the mountain one day, and he came down with all sorts of goodies. And that has been nothing but unrest for the last 1,400 years. I wish Muhammad's mother had turned over that night and said, not tonight, dear, I have a headache, because this would have saved us 1,400 years of strife that we're facing and continue to face, and our grandchildren will continue to face, unless we can get very active and do something about it right now. I have nothing but admiration for the apostate. I want to share with you a story about a gentleman. I want to talk to you about this fine fella, Yahya Hassan. He's 18 years old. And believe me, he's really, really angry. It's not what you expect, though. He is of a Palestinian Muslim background. He is extremely critical of his immigrant parents, and he's extremely critical of Islam in general. Yahya is a poet residing in Denmark now. He goes on speaking tours with his poetry, and he talks about Islam. But like I say, he's angry, but not what you'd expect him to be angry about. No, he's not a Muslim. He's an apostate, and he's pissed off with Islam. This young gentleman, 18 years old, walked away. But he just didn't walk away quietly into that gentle night. No, no, no. He's embarking on the world stage, and he's sharing with you what he thinks of Islam. He lived it. He grew up in it, in Palestine, the failed state. I call it Palestine. But last week, he astonished Denmark. And he astonished and shocked the Muslim community by reading a poem on the television program Deadline. It included these lines. I piss on Allah and his messenger and on all his useless disciples. He recited another poem, and this one particularly about his father. He made five children with bitter hearts and found a new headscarf and made three more. And you know what that means. Dear old dad took on another wife, right? Now, you, Max Jensen, he said that it's no exaggeration that Yahya Hassan's unambiguous statements on Islam have left the left wing, the multiculturalist, and the educated public in general in a state of panic. And since they have strived to give the impression that Hassan is only criticizing aspects of Islam or that he is critical of all religions, no, that Christianity is harmless. So, no, he's not criticizing our religions, ladies and gents. He's not criticizing Buddhism, Christianity, Judaism, anything. No, he's criticizing Islam. He was featured in an article in the Daily, Jilin's Posten magazine. And you, it's a newspaper. My apologies. And we all remember the Jyllands Posten newspaper. That's the home of the Danish Muhammad cartoons. Yeah. Yes, he was featured in there. And he went on to say, the ghettos are full of stupid Muslims who run around in jogging outfits. And he's referring to the Muslims he sees in Denmark. They go to the Friday prayers but spend the other days of the week stealing, fencing, drinking booze, and going to bed with Danish girls. When they are in prison, they will leaf through the Quran, get themselves worry beads, and accumulate good deeds so that they can start anew with all the forbidden stuff. Is it any wonder that we are faced with a generation of stupid people when their parents are so idiotic? They have exempted their children from Christianity and sports in public schools, i.e. education. Just the fact that they are not allowed to swim together with Danish children creates a physical distance. It's us and them all the time. Now, I'm going to have to use a bit of a swearing here, so I'll get the kids out of the room because I have to put this in the context of which it is worthy. This is from LiveLeak and says, I'm fucking angry at my parents' generation who came to Denmark in the late 1980s. The huge group of refugees who were supposed to be parents have totally failed their children. As soon as our parents landed in Kastrup Airport, it was as if their role as parents ceased, and then we could see our fathers rot passively up a welfare on the couch with the remote in their hand, accompanied by a disillusioned mother who never objected. Keep in mind, this kid is 18 years old. Carrying on with what Yahya has to say. The worst thing of all was that they actually had time for us, but used it on everything else. The men played cards, lounged about, went to the mosque, and watched the news from the Middle East, while the women were busy gossiping and chasing special offers in the supermarket. When a spoiled upper-class boy today complains that his father was never there because he worked late into the night, there is a logic to it which I understand. The father was away at work. The vast majority of fathers in the area where I grew up in, Arasvest, were unemployed and on welfare. They had all the time in the world they could wish for, but did not use it on us. My father once had a job as a taxi driver. It just meant that he was only physically away, and nothing changed. Yahya goes on to say, I have been beaten as a child, systematically beaten. All my friends were brought up with beatings. My father spent time on finding punishments for me and my siblings. He forced us to stand on one leg facing the walls for hours with hands outstretched to each side. It's sick. It was not so much that they could not help us with our homework or cite classic poems, but rather that they could not be bothered with us, that they did not take an interest in their own children. That's what makes me angry today. That's why I attack in my poems. they were just spectators who occasionally boxed our ears in order to feel that they could still maintain order. Now listen to that last part again, so that they could still maintain order. Yahya Hassan, he is a Palestinian poet living in Copenhagen, Denmark. His book of poetry is titled Yahya Hassan, and it has sold more than 17,000 copies in less than 1 month. In his poetry, Hassan has criticized what he claims is a culture of hypocrisy underpinning Denmark's Muslim population. He has lashed out at Muslims for failing to integrate in Danish society while clinging to the Quran. On November 19th of 2013, Hassan was attacked by Abdul Basit Abu Lifa, an Islamist previously convicted of terrorism in 2007. Abdul Basit Abu Lifa shouted that Hassan was an infidel and should die as he attacked him. After the attack, Hassan expressed his indignation on Facebook by writing, "Can one not speak freely without being attacked?" As of November 19th of 2013, Hassan has been subject to a total of 27 death threats and has been put under police protection. And there's a picture of him. If you scroll up beyond the chat room, I have a picture of this young lad there in the slides. You can take a look at him. An apostate. And brave. Isn't it a shame if you decide to leave your quote-unquote religion to either join another or not join another one at all? Isn't it a shame that this young man left Islam and at 18 years of age, he's got fatwas? And he lives under police protection. Because what is he doing so wrong? He's telling us the truth. He's not lying. He lived it. And boy, the Islamic community sure as hell does not like that. I'm going to share with you some passages from the Quran in a minute. But what I want to do, and I hate doing this, but this is important. Yahya, he was scheduled to speak at an event, and he actually did. Palestinian poet Yahya Hassan creates a security crisis in Denmark by planning to read Islam critical works at a library in heavily enriched areas of Volsmos. Now, you might mind, this is an English translation, so any grammar is the responsibility of the person that translated it. But you know what? That's okay, because believe me, as you know, I am not the most grammatically correct. I'm your Eliza Doolittle. So I do want to share this with you, though, and I'm going to bring it up right now. And come on, baby, be nice. Okay, where are you going on me? Here we are. Palestinian poet. So the man behind me, he's a poet, only 18 years old, a Palestinian origin. And at 7 p.m., he will recite his poems, poems so explosive that the police are on the highest alert. One might think that a foreign head of state was paying an official visit. I have heard that this is seven times as costly as taking care of a league of soccer players. Between Danish teams, OB, and everything else, this is unreal. One woman says, "It's not like I am afraid of it, but I do ask myself, is it necessary? But it is merely the 18-year-old Yahya Hassan from Arnis who is to read his poems at the Hannes Christian Andersen School in the Odense neighborhood. This is both about his safety and about securing the location where the event takes place. And it is about security for the people coming and going. Due to this, police have cordoned off the area around the school and even announced a no-fly zone over Volksmuls. Do you believe this? Okay. Yep. I'm just pausing this. Yeah. I'm going to post this article in the chat room in a moment. I want you to take a look at this video a little later on. Oh, they've got police snipers on the roof and everything. Oh, there's cruisers all over the place. Oh, ladies and gentlemen, this is just unfreaking believable. Well, there are many kinds of aircraft. Some might hang in the air making noise, and some could be filming, and some could do other things. For the words in the poetry of Yahya Hassan are controversial. I hate your veils and your Korans and your illiterate prophets. He's just a small dirtbag. That's what he is, standing there throwing dirt on his parents and on Islam. And, of course, this is an Islamic dissenter. I'm sure you figured that part out. Oh, shut up. For security reasons, Danish police requested the event to be moved to the from the library to a nearby school. Mm-hmm. I think it's a great idea, a great opportunity, and hope the event will go really well. It feels good. It's nice. And these are two young boys. They look to be about 10, maybe 11 years of age, and they're smiling. And I don't know what feels good and feels nice to them. They look Islamic. They look like immigrants themselves. But maybe they're following in Yahya's footsteps. Hopefully down the road they will be another Yahya. So it feels good, it feels nice, they say. Yahya Hassan also believes that the immigrant-heavy suburb, Volksmuls, is the problem. This is where things are happening. This is where the problems are. And things will work out just fine. If things work out as they usually do, it will all be quiet, says another resident. Another resident says, "I think absolutely nothing will happen. Absolutely nothing." And interjecting. Let's see, shall we? Back to video. It has not been possible for us to contact the main person, Yahya Hassan, today. But on the other hand, I am now connected to you, Claus Burr. You are at the Hans Christian Andersen School, where Yahya Hassan will recite his poems in a half an hour. You have been in the area all day. Please describe the situation out there for us. They're waiting quietly. It seems that most here hope that the last man interviewed will be right, but nothing happens. Police certainly did all they could, including taking to those potentially causing problems. I don't know if you can hear the people speaking in the background. I'll turn up my speaker a little bit. But also by creating an iron ring around the school, I stand here. And the young poet Hassan arrived here 5 minutes ago. He is backstage, protected by police. And And he will be sitting. I'm not sure if you can see it from this person is up there, but he will be sitting at the front of the stage. He will be sitting on a big red armchair on the stage. As you tell us, police are massively present. How serious is the threat against him, in a few words? It is severe. The Danish Intelligence Service reported that it is believed there is a direct threat against him.
Den er alvorlig. Altså, politiets efterretningstjeneste mener, ifølge mine oplysninger, at der er en konkret trussel imod ham. Ikke bare en generel trussel.
Not just a generic threat, a specific threat against him. Thus, he now has bodyguards around the clock.
En konkret trussel imod ham. Og derfor bliver han nu beskyttet alle døgnets timer af livvagter. Det er ganske usædvanligt i Danmark.
This is very unusual in Denmark. He is probably now considered one of the top five human targets in Denmark.
Han er formentlig lige nu at regne for en af de fem mest truede mennesker i Danmark.
Og hvad er det så?
And what is the greatest fear for the police tonight?
Der egentlig er politiets værste frygt i aften.
Grunden til, at politiet er flyttet her.
The reason that police moved the event to the school from the library down here, 200 meters away,
op til skolen i stedet for ned til biblioteket, der ligger 100 meter herfra, eller 100 meter, det er et sted.
Is that the location might come under attack, that some may conduct a full assault on the venue.
Og skulle blive angrebet, altså at nogen skulle vælge at angribe stedet her, så Yahya Hassan, ham skulle...
Yahya Hassan could easily be protected and escorted away from here.
Nok kunne beskytte og få væk herfra, men det er alle de folk...
But all those people coming here as audience tonight are the greatest concern for the police.
Der kommer her i aften, som nok er politiets største bekymring, men det er vigtigt at understrege.
But it is important to stress that at the moment, things are entirely calm here in Vollsmose.
At der er altså på nuværende tidspunkt helt og dels ro i Vollsmose.
Like I say, I hate doing literal translation on the air. This is live radio. I don't have a studio where I can go out and edit and, make it all look pretty fancy for you folks. But I think I gave you a very, very good idea as to what is going on here. This gentleman is brave. And him standing out. Hey, guess what, Obama? If I had a son... It would be Yahya. Apostasy, the punishments, it's unbelievable. Apostates of Islam, why do they leave Islam? Because they have seen the light. There's a group out there. It's called We Left Islam. Before I move on to that, though, I do want to put the link to this in the chat room for you. And I want to bring that bad boy back up, if I can. Where did he go? Oh, trust me to lose it already. Here, I'll do it this way. I'll go through the back door and bring it back up. Okay. Here we are. I got it. Sorry about that, ladies and gents. I have like four windows open, and one of them ran away from me. But here is the link for you to take a look at later. Now, getting back to where I was on my other page. Islam and apostasy. Like I was saying, there's an entire website dedicated to apostates and why they left Islam. But apostasy. Does Islam prescribe the death penalty for Muslims who wish to embrace another religion? And like I aforementioned, maybe not at all. Well, those who turn their backs on Islam are to be executed. I'm getting distracted by shiny things. I have all these windows open, and poor Lady Michelle, she's saying, it's cold out, Kel, shut the damn window. And Paul Alexander is saying, I've got 40 windows open, Kel. Okay, you brats. Get back to your corners. I'm reporting you. But yeah, does Islam prescribe the death penalty for Muslims if they wish to embrace another religion aforementioned or no other religion at all? Yes. It does. Those who turn their backs on Islam are to be executed. And this is confirmed by the words and the deeds of Muhammad, the false prophet. The only freedom of belief in Islam is the freedom to become a Muslim. And I can't type with one hand, so I just want to say hello to people who are joining me in the chat room right now. And that's A12 Iggy Mom, Doc, a couple of guests here, Holder Awakens, Lady Michelle, and Paul Alexander. Thanks, guys, for being here. And I want to thank Sue from New Mexico, who's listening on the line as well. Have you read the Quran? Don't know where, I can't remember where I saw that. Have you read the Quran? Yeah. If you guys want to do yourselves a favor, invest in that book, The Reliance of the Traveler. It's a tome. Don't read it cover to cover. It's not a novel by any means, but it is a very, very good reference to have on hand. And it does translate the Quran from Arabic into English. So yeah, I more or less am reading the Quran again. But Quran 489. They wish that you should disbelieve as they disbelieve, and then you would be equal. Therefore, take not to yourself friends of them until they emigrate in the way of God. Then, if they turn their backs, take them and slay them wherever you find them. Take not to yourselves any one of them as friend or helper. Quran 9-1.12. But if they repent and establish worship and pay the poor due, then are they your brethren in religion. We detail our revelations for a people who have knowledge. And if they break their pledge after their treaty has been made upon you and assail your religion, then fight the heads of the disbelief. Lo, they have no binding oaths in order that they may desist. You can find all sorts of beautiful verses in the hadith. You can go to verse 2.217, 9.73-74, 88.21, 5.54, and 9.66. It's all there, kids. Now, this is from the Hadith. The reason why executing apostates has always been well ensconced in Islamic law is that there is an indisputable record of Muhammad and his companions doing exactly that, according to the reliable Hadith. According to verse 4-80 of the Quran, who obeyeth the messenger, obeyeth Allah. In this hadith, 52-260, the prophet said, if somebody be a Muslim, discard his religion, kill him. Now, this is interesting. There's really no distinction. How did a Muslim become a Muslim in the first place, right? Here's another hadith for you. 83-37, Allah's apostle never killed anyone except in one of the following three situations. 1, a person who killed somebody unjustly was killed, in quizzes. 2, a married person who committed illegal sexual intercourse. And 3, a man who fought against Allah and his apostle and deserted Islam and became an apostate. Eighty-four, Matthew 26:57, in the words of Allah, Allah's apostle, whoever changed his Islamic religion, then kill him. There are also too many verses in the Quran. It's like 95% of the damned Quran is devoted to nothing but killing, plunging, and caliphating. And I don't know if I just made up a new word, caliphating. Yeah, the religion of peace. Yeah. It's like Hotel California, isn't it? Except these people are born in the lobby of the Hotel California. And it's just by the grace of God, our God, the true God, Jesus Christ, that they can get out. However, it kind of reminds me of that movie. Do you remember that movie, Beetlejuice? I love that movie. Oh, my God, Michael Keaton, eh? Gotta love him in that one. Well, do you remember when those two characters, they died? And that was Gina Davis and Alec Baldwin, yeah. And then they come back to the house and they discover that maybe they might be dead. And Gina Davis's character, she's taking this little pony across the mirror, and you can only see the pony. They can't see their reflections in the mirror. And so Alec Baldwin's character, he opens the door to go outside and see what the hell is going on, and he falls, and he's in a desert, and it's full of those desert worms, those big, huge old desert worms, and they're swimming around, and they're coming after him. They're coming after him, and he's panicked, and he's, oh, my God, what's going on? And he manages to get himself back in the house and slams the door. That's Islam. That's exactly what Islam is. That is their Hotel California. You try to leave. Watch out. We're out there, and we're going to get you. We're going to get you. Good. Who ever thought in the world that we would think that somebody merely leaving a so-called religion would be considered brave, like this gentleman? Who in a million years? Can you imagine this for your grandchildren? The religion of peace, my ass. I am so proud of this gentleman, Yahya Hassan. And I wish him nothing but Godspeed. I was referring to a group earlier, Apostates of Islam. There's an entire website for it. Why we left Islam. Who are these people? They're ex-Muslims. Some of them were born and raised in Islam, and some of us have converted to Islam. We were taught never to question the truth of Islam and to believe in Allah and His Messenger with blind faith. We were told that Allah would forgive all sins, but the sin of disbelief, 4-48, 4-116. But we committed the ultimate sin of thinking and question the belief that was imposed on us, and we came to realize that far from being a religion of truth, Islam is a hoax. It's a hallucination of a sick mind and nothing but lies and deceits. What do these people believe, these apostates? Some of us have embraced other religions, but most of us have simply left Islam without believing in any other religion. We believe in humanity. We believe that humans do not need to follow a religion to be good. All we need to follow is the golden rule. All we have to do is treat others the way we expected to be treated. This is the essence of all the goodness. All good religious teachings stem from this eternal principle. This is the ultimate guidance humanity needs. This is the golden rule. So why is Muhammad not a prophet? One who claims to be a messenger of God is expected to live a saintly life. He must not be given to lust. He must not be a sexual pervert. And he must not be a rapist, a highway robber, a war criminal, a mass murderer, or an assassin. One who claims to be a messenger of God must have a superior character. He must stand above the vices of the people of his time. Yet Muhammad's life is that of a gangster godfather. He raided merchant caravans, looted innocent people, massacred entire male populations, and enslaved the women and children. He raped the women captured in war after killing their husbands and told his followers that it is okay to have sex with their captives in their right-hand possession. And that is from Quran 33-50. He assassinated those who criticized him and executed them when he came to power and became de facto a despot of Arabia. Muhammad was bereft of human compassion. He was an obsessed man with his dreams of grandiosity and could not forgive those who stood in his way. Muhammad was as narcissistic as Hitler, Saddam, or Stalin. He was astute and knew how to manipulate the people, but his emotional intelligence was less evolved than that of a 6-year-old child. He simply could not feel the pain of others. He brutally massacred thousands of innocent people and pillaged their wealth. His ambitions were big, and a narcissist, he honestly believed he is entitled to do as he pleased and commit all sorts of crimes, and his evil deeds are justified. Gee, and Lady Michelle, you bring up a really good comment in the chat room. Yeah. Who is Kel describing? Obama? Indeed. Mm-hmm. Now, the Quran is not from God. Muhammad produced no miracles, and when he pressed, he claimed that his miracle is the Quran. Now, you know, you take a cursory look at the Quran, and it reveals in this book, it's full of errors. The Quran is replete with scientific heresies, historic blunders, mathematical mistakes, logical absurdities, grammatical errors, and ethical fallacies. It's badly compiled, and it contradicts itself. There is nothing intelligent in this book, let alone miraculous. Muhammad challenged people to produce a surah like it, or found an error therein, yet Muslims would kill anyone who dares to criticize it. In a climate of such hypocrisy and violence of truth, that is the first casualty. So there you go. Muhammad himself, the false prophet, he said, find an error in it. Go ahead. If you can find an error, okay. But no. Muslims kill anybody who criticizes it. I'm going to put this group, this link in the chat room for you folks because it is chock full of very interesting things. If you're studying Islam and you want to delve into the issue of apostasy, I think that you will really get a lot out of this page. So. There you go. And for my archive listeners, if I think about it, I'll try to put it in the Red Fox Infidels Are Watching blog. But what's the goal of this page, guys? Well, they're apostates of Islam. They denounce Islam. They recognize it as a false doctrine of hate and terror. But they are not against Muslims. They consider them kin and relatives. They have kin and they have relatives. They do not advocate hate and violence because they consider Muslims as the main victims of Islam. And yes, I can totally agree with that. I have said this on the Red Fox blogger more than once, that Muslims are the biggest victims of Islam. Their goal is to educate Muslims and let the Muslims see the truth. They're against Islam, but not the Muslims. They want to bring Muslims into the fold of humanity. They want to eradicate Islam so their people can be liberated, so that they can prosper and break away from the pillory of Islam. This group would like to see Islamic countries dedicated more to science and less time to Quran and Sharia. This group would like to see them prosper and contribute to human civilization. They would like to see the draconian laws of Islam eliminated and people treated humanely. This group strives for freedom of belief, for equality of gender, and for oneness of humankind. Today, the humanity is facing a great danger, and it is. Islamic fundamentalism, it's on the rise, and the hatred is brewing in the minds of millions of Muslims. This hatred, it has to be confined, or there will be disastrous consequences in which we are witnessing today, folks. We believe that the education is the only answer. Muslim intellectuals must realize that Islam is a false doctrine, and they must let the rest of the Islamic world know the truth. Islam is a religion that thrives on the arrogant assumptions that it is the most logical, the most scientific, and the most perfect religion. While the fact is that it is the stupidest doctrine, the most backward and absurd belief. Once the truth about Islam becomes common knowledge, it will be weakened, and the Islamic fanaticism will lose its fangs. Hundreds of billions of dollars are being expended to combat Islamic terrorism, yet no effort is made to contain the ideology behind the terrorism. It is this group's belief that Islamic terrorism will not be eliminated unless and until the ideology behind it is exposed and eradicated. And this is what this group intends to do. Apostates of Islam. Wow. I'm halfway through my show. I can't believe it. I'm going to take a very quick break and get rid of, close some of the windows for Michelle because she's freezing in the chat room. But I'll be back here in a few minutes.
Appeasement. Appeasement. Dressed up as political compromise. It's immediate. The benefits seem immediate
and popular.
And tangible.
Profitable.
Peace. At what price? But is it not an illusion? Are we not kidding ourselves? Not just staving off the day of reckoning. Can evil ever be compromised? Ever be compromised? Evil will live on. Evil will live on. Evil will live on.
Do we sacrifice our principles in the name of diplomacy?
Tolerate intolerance.
Shake hands with those who hate us. Can they ever be satisfied?
Are the foreign flag yet fly over Paris, London, Rome, and Washington?
They want to take over.
Democracy lost love.
hedonist again corrupt, and they should be able to defeat it. Let's hope they understand the will, the resolve of the people of that democracies are up to it and strong. Don't submit, surrender, don't succumb, cause evil will live on. Evil will live on. Evil will live on.
After them. The good is oft interred with their bones.
So we've been discussing apostasy tonight and the ramifications behind a Muslim that leaves it, that walks away, an ex-Muslim, if you will. You know, this is why you have to sit your children down and explain to them what Islam is. I've heard way too many stories about Christian, Jewish, Hindu, Buddhist, whatever background, parents losing their children to Islam, converting. And by the way, you know that when you convert to Islam, you're not really converting, you're reverting, because Islam believes all of us were born Muslims, but we have been led astray by pagan religions. That's right. So, yeah, essentially we're all Muslims. We just practice other religions until we finally see Muhammad's light and his vision. Oh, my God. Is there no end to the arrogance of this bloody religion? Oh, I just scared my cat out of the room. Sorry, Priya. And they're here. They're in the West. They're in the West. That song I just played, Dimitude. Yeah. We're enabling the jihadists. That's what we're doing. We're enabling them. We see it all over. We see it in the United States, in Canada, in the UK. Everywhere. We have heard of cases where Muslim immigrants get lighter sentences for rape because the judge has deemed that, well, they don't understand the Western culture. We've heard of all those cases. We've heard of cases where Muslims, they immigrate and they're not quite fitting in. And they behave in Sharia mannerisms like honor killings. They honestly believe that they are living by the dictates of Muhammad. They come over here and they create all sorts of problems. And they have the weaponry that we inadvertently handed to them. Civilizational jihad, legal jihad. CARE, the Council of American Islamic Relations, always sticks out at me. And CARE is growing quite fast in the United States. I think the largest chapter of CARE at this point is in Florida. And they're holding a lot of sway. They control our elections. They control our school bodies. They control our civic engagements. They are dangerous. Islam is dangerous. Not just for the apostate. So, okay, what are we going to do? Did we let the camel's nose in our tent? Damn right we did. So what are we going to do about it now? Well, like that, which I explained in that website. Yeah, we can drop bombs left, right, and center all we want. Oh, and by the way, we're not, though, because, unfortunately, we have also turned our soldiers into social workers. Kinetically fighting them? Sure. Those we can control. We can control the kinetic jihadists, those who are engaging in the lower jihad. Yeah, we can control that. We can kill a few hundred here and a few hundred there, accumulate into the thousands, maybe the hundred thousands. I mean, we've been doing it for 1,400 years, so let's continue, right? But like that website says, it is not the kinetic jihad that we have to be concerned about. Although, it's terrible. We deal with the kinetic jihad. Of course it's terrible. 9/11, for God's sake. But it's the ideology that's the bigger threat. It's bloody hell. It's organizations like CARE. It's organizations like the Student Muslim Associations. It's the political parties. It is our allowing these damn Muslims to get that nose through our tents with their ideology. And we're not controlling that. We're not controlling that one at all. I went to Paul Weston's website today, Liberty GB. Paul Weston is a prolific politician in the United Kingdom. And you'll know Paul Weston. He made that video a few months back. My name is Paul Weston, and yes, I am a racist, because he is highly critical of Islam, and he's fighting it. He's Britain's Geert Wilders, is what Paul Weston is. There is an article in there, and I found it really quite interesting. It's a satirical article. It's The Immigrant's Guide to British Manners. Now, Sheffield Council, they had a leaflet aimed at combating antisocial behavior by Roma immigrants to the city. As you know, England is part of the European Union, and as of January 1st, the floodgates are pretty much going to be open for immigrants looking for work. So England is going to be totally influxed with a lot of Ukrainians, Roma, more Polish. Not that there's anything wrong with that, but there is the economic issues. That's more what England is concerned about, the economic ramifications with all of these people coming in. So Sheffield Council in particular, they put this leaflet together to aid these newcomers to the country. Well, there's a gentleman who took that leaflet, and he kind of put his own twist on it. And this is a guide for new immigrants. This is a guide to British manners. And this is number one. If you're Mohammedan, if you are of Mohammedan persuasion, please try not to let explosive gadgets on public transport. Don't try to let them off, as it disrupts the timetable and causes an awful lot of dust and bother. Also, the authorities have to spend months and months calming everyone down and explaining that it has nothing to do with religion, which is every right-thinking every right-thinking person knows is dedicated to peace, tolerance, and love. Yeah, that's right. So yeah, don't be blowing up our buses, please. Number two. Gang raping of little girls is considered quite bad. It's considered a very bad form in Britain. And although the police, social services, and local authorities are happy to turn a blind eye to it, there are still some fuddy-duddies who dislike this sort of thing. So remember to use discretion the next time you're loitering around the gates of the local girls' school with pockets full of sweets and vodka. And just going off script here, that would be the Islamic sex grooming gangs that are prolific in Britain, and they groom these girls, they bring them in, starting out as boyfriends and giving them drugs and booze, and yeah. So don't hang around the local girls' school with pockets full of sweets and vodka. All right? Just don't do it. Okay? Number three, we warn you in the strongest possible terms that chopping off the heads of passing soldiers is very un-British. If you are in town and happen to have a machete in your pocket when you spot off-duty military personnel, please, please try to calm yourself and count to 10 before doing anything rash. If you really can't control yourself, then on no account shout, "Allahu Akbar," as this reflects badly on the peace-loving Muslim community, who, as you know, are behind our armed forces 100%. Uh-huh. Boy, oh boy. Let me see. Number four. Strange as it may seem, here in Britain, we're a bit squeamish about this business of hacking and mutilating little girls' private parts. Of course, we would never think of arresting anyone because it's cultural and everything, and as far as we're concerned, as long as it's cultural, you can do whatever you like. But again, discretion is the byword. And number five, politeness is a two-way street. And from time to time, you may hear British people making very impolite remarks like, "If you hate Britain so much, so sod off home. Stop shitting on my Dalalas. What the hell happened to my country? I don't recognize it anymore. And this isn't a bloody mosque. Get off the street and pray somewhere else." Rest assured that if you report these people, we will interrogate them, throw them in prison, take their children away, and destroy their jobs and reputations. It's the least we can do to make you feel welcome in our free and tolerant society. Number six, when you and your friends are feeling a little peckish and decide to go hunting in one of our royal parks, please take the precaution of stripping away fur, feathers, etc. before roasting your catch. We've received numerous complaints from people claiming to have been seen swan's feathers and such like burning on open spits, and obviously this does not help community cohesion. Just a moment's thought can help avoid unnecessary confrontation with the locals. And number seven, if by any chance you get into a street brawl with the natives, it's considered bad form to use expressions like "kill the white bitch." It only creates bad feelings, and we'd rather you did not do that. Obviously, hate crime legislation doesn't apply in this type of situation, so there's no need to worry about prosecution. But for the sake of community cohesion, do try to keep mum when kicking and stabbing English, Scottish, or Welsh people in public. And please see guideline number three above. Number eight, just as we British have Guy Fawkes Night, some of you have your own incendiary traditions, such as Hell for Heroes poppy burning ceremony. As you know, the British police have done everything they can to facilitate this tradition and will continue to do so. But please try to implement sensible fire precautions, as plastic components in some poppies may flare up unexpectedly, giving a nasty burn. Number nine, whilst we defend the right of the proud Roma people to maintain their age-old tradition of converting picturesque fields into rubbish tips, buzzing with flies and patrolled by vicious Alsatians, we would ask all Roma living in Britain to respect also the rights and wishes of their Pakistani, Bangladeshi, Ukrainian, Polish, Bulgarian, or Romanian and Chinese hosts. And number 10, we encourage ethnic minority groups to form their own neighborhood patrols to enforce British law and practices and to report to the police any racist British vigilantes they may encounter in their arenas. For the sake of community cohesion, we urge all migrants to abide by these guidelines or else. Well, we might have to send out some stiff letters. So there you go. And I'm going to put this in the chat room for the folks. I also have it on my blog. I just put it in my blog today. So for the archive listeners, you can visit the Red Fox Blogger and see it there. Now, I want to just touch very, very briefly on what's going on with Iran and Obama. And what the hell is he doing? As we all know, Obama signed a treaty with Iran in that if they cease and desist with their Iranian ambition or their ambitions to build a nuclear bomb, well, the United States will lift the sanctions, right? But it's like, oh, my God, Obama, what have you done? Like, I hope you understand the ramifications behind what Barack Hussein Obama has done, what this deal means. It's a deal with the devil. It really is. Now, Rohan Husseini, how do you say it? Rouhani, my apologies. They're so... Why can't these people have names like Smith and Jones, for God's sake? Like, they really do drive me crazy. But this is not a good deal at all for the American people. It's certainly not good for Israel. And dealing with Rouhani, this guy is not a moderate at all. It's a very, very bad situation that we're in. I don't want to get into it, like I say. I'm still going over through so many notes regarding it. But I want to share this with you. This is Iran, okay? This is the Iran. This is the country that Obama is appeasing.
In 1979, the pro-Western government of Iran was deposed by religious fanatics led by the Ayatollah Khomeini. Under Khomeini's government, anti-American demonstrations became the norm. 55 Americans were captured from the U.S. Embassy and held hostage for more than a year. Khomeini defended the kidnapping, saying the USA is the foremost enemy of Islam. It is a terrorist state by nature that has set fire to everything, everywhere. He also preached that Islam says, kill the non-Muslims and put them to the sword. The current supreme leader, the Ayatollah Ali Khamenei, also hostile, announced, the Iranian people's hatred for America is profound. Other Iranian leaders have indicated their hatred for the West and their thirst for violence. The current leader of Hezbollah, a group armed by Iran, has repeated the Iranian mantra toward the U.S. saying, our hostility to the great Satan America is absolute. Death to America will remain a reverberating and powerful slogan. Ali Larijani, current speaker of the Iranian parliament, has also voiced a hatred of the United States, saying that the time has come for the disappearance of the West from the face of the universe. With the recent election of Hassan Rouhani as president of Iran and his subsequent charm offensive, the Obama administration has expressed hope in a new partnership with Iran. But is Rouhani really a moderate looking to make peace? In 1995, Rouhani said, the beautiful cry of death to America unites our nation. And when he was on the campaign trail this year, he claimed that saying death to America is easy. We need to express death to America with action. Now is not the time to loosen sanctions. If we fail to defend ourselves now, by 2014, it may be too late. Call your senators today and tell them to keep tough economic sanctions in place until the threat from Iran is totally dismantled.
Now, And I just want to bring that back a bit for you here. And here, I'm just going to mute this because I want to bring this back a little bit for you because there is a number where you can call your senator, and I want to relate it to you on the air. Don't loosen sanctions on Iran. Call your senators, and you can do this at 212-224-3121. 202-224-3121. And this is also in my blog for my archive listeners. If you want to go in and take a look at it, you won't have to scroll down too far. For the people in my chat room, I'll put it in there for you right now. So here we go. Like I say, I don't want to delve too deeply into this because, believe me, there are more intelligent people that can do that for you, and they would do much more justice than I ever can. But I am down to my last 20 minutes. I want to share with you, though, something. And this is for, well, it's not for my friend. It's from my friend. And this is from Ava Aston. And she is involved in a very wonderful endeavor right now. We all know Ava Aston as her signature song is We Are the People, right? A few years back, Ava Aston and her husband, they were coming back from the recording studio, and they were involved in a very, very terrible, terrible car accident, which left them both with rather grievous injuries. And it made Ava, well, it made her mad. She questioned God, and she wondered why. Her career was taking off. She was doing wonderful, but she was angry. And she held that bitterness for a number of years, and then Ava came across something, and she realized that maybe God had put her in that place for a reason. I'm going to let Ava explain to you what is going on right now.
I'm an independent recording artist, and I live just outside of New York City. For my entire life, which is a very, very long time, I have been working on building a music career. And just when it seemed like it was about to move, my husband and I were rear-ended in a terrible car accident. We both suffered several injuries, including both of us having a traumatic brain injury. So for the last 2 years, we spent countless hours in recovery, and I watched as what was moving in my career slowly began to dwindle and drift away. I found myself really upset, not knowing how or why God could allow this to happen. It wasn't until much prayer and reflection that I came to understand that that bad thing was actually for my good. I began to realize that I was on the potter's wheel. You see, for my entire life, I had been trying to do things my way. I wanted a music career for my reason and my purpose. And just when it seemed like it was starting to move, finally, God stopped me. He showed me during this time that my voice, the gift that He gave me, was for Him and His purpose. That He wanted me to use it for His glory, not mine. Now, trust me, if any of you know me, you would know that this is not exactly the easiest thing for me to handle, because this freak girl likes doing things my way. And patience, well, let's just say that is not one of my redeeming qualities. This experience, though, has been a turning point in my life. I came to understand that God was using this time to break me down and build me back up, only this time it was going to be done His way. So I'm setting out on a whole new journey and taking music in a new direction by recording my very first Christian music album. I have songs ready to go that are all rooted in the message of faith, hope, love, not giving up, And they also embrace and promote the American values that I'm so passionate about. So as my own act of faith, I'm stepping out. And I'm asking you to join me. Because just like me, God wants to do a work in each and every one of us. Music is a really powerful tool. It can speak where words can't. And that's why I've come to making this campaign, because I simply cannot make this happen on my own. This campaign is my act of faith in Him, that through people like you, who share my values, who are saddened by what they see all around them throughout pop culture, with the decline in the moral fabric of our society, that we'll be able to raise the financial support needed in order to complete my first faith-based album. It's all part of a multi-phase plan, but step one is to record the album. So I'm asking for your prayerful consideration in helping to make that come to fruition. There are a number of awards to show my appreciation for getting involved. My hope is that you would take the time to consider helping me to do what I believe that God has called me to do with the gifts and talents that He's given me, which is to spread the message of faith, hope, and love, to make music that will encourage and lift people up in a world that, let's face it, is just far too often busy tearing people down. There are rewards for all levels, even as low as $5. There's no amount too small, and it will all help to get the music and message out to the masses. So please, pledge if you can, and share the campaign with your friends, family, and email, and social media. Most of all, I'm asking for your prayers as I set out on this journey. Thank you so much for your time. See you later.
And I totally endorse what Ava Astin is engaging in right now, because she is a voice. She's a wonderful singer, and I interviewed her on the show, and I was a giggly little schoolgirl. But she's very, very committed, and she's very, very there for us as people. She loves her country, and she loves our troops. She composed this song for the those that were repatriated home in a steel box. This is Ava Astin, I Carry You With Me.
One.
also support this beautiful lady on her latest journey. Ava Astin is a voice for the people. She truly is, and I'm very excited to endorse this endeavor. She is a very, very committed person, believe me. She's committed to our troops. She's committed to America. She'll vigorously support the United States of America, and she's prepared to defend it against enemies or detractors. She's a good Christian, and I just adore her. I do. Ava, I adore you. I do. And I cannot sing anything like she does. So for my archive listeners, once again, I have the link right there in the show highlights so you can go visit her site, okay? And please do that. I am nearly out of time, but of course I cannot go without playing for you a cause that I support, and that is Unforgotten Heroes. This is an organization that helps veterans coming home from war resettle. They find them jobs, they find them homes, and they give them any help they need to reassimilate back into civilian society. And the woman behind this is Allison, and we know her in the chat rooms as Rockstar. So please also support Unforgotten Heroes.
For many of our vets, the real battle is only beginning. With high unemployment, post-traumatic stress disorder, and life-altering injuries, coming back to civilian life can be a difficult journey. We can't wait for the government to solve the problems our veterans face. We must help those who have given so much in defense of our freedom. Unforgotten Heroes is an organization dedicated to assisting our veterans in whatever way is needed in their transition back to civilian life. Please visit unforgottenheroes.org to find out what you can do to help. You can also find Unforgotten Heroes on Facebook. And remember, no hero should ever be forgotten.
And let's be that a hero to save us. I'm not gonna stand here and wait. I'll hold on to the wings of the eagle, watching the old fly away.
So, do support our troops. Support our men and women in the military. Always. Wow, I'm out of time, folks. I don't know where the time went. It went so fast. I came here at 5 to 7 to open up the studio, and boom, it's going on 8:30. Wow, I must be that entertaining to myself. But before I go, I do want to just remind you of some programming. As you know, the Red Fox Blogger is also heard on Monday afternoons at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, and my co-host there is Tim Burton, and that is the Freedom-Loving Infidel, Cat Strangler 101. Meow! And the first Monday of every month, we have a new segment with her own 30-minute segment, and that is Jan English of the Christian Defense League. She will be holding court right here on the Red Fox Blogger, and her first installment will be this Monday. So try to be here for this and support Jan and support the EDL in general. As you know, I produce and sometimes co-host with Jeff Mitchell over there at the East Anglian EDL radio show. So this is very exciting for me, and it's very exciting for the Red Fox Blogger. And on Wednesdays, Mike Holt, Door Australia, sits right here in the Red Fox Blogger chair for an hour, and he tells you what's going on in terms of Islam in Australia. And Wednesdays, 3 p.m. Eastern Time. So book your calendars and join us for that as well. I am very excited about doing this program. I'm very excited about turning this into a platform where others can come and speak with you and tell you in their own words, in their own countries, what is going on. Jan from England, Mike Holt from Australia, and I'm pleased to sit with Jeff Mitchell on East Anglian. There is something about being a counter-jihadist. It's in your blood. It is an obligation to us in our heart, because we're not going to sit by and we're not going to explain to our children that we did nothing when the Islamic scourge comes to town, which is, in my opinion, already here. Our Dhimmi politicians are not doing anything about it. All we can do is promote these shows. Radio Jihad Network, 7 days a week. All we can do is give you a bit of homework, give you the tools to do a little more research and be a little more informed and educated as to what Islam is all about. I really hope that when you listen to me, you walk away with a bit more knowledge. But on that note, I am going to say goodnight, and I wish you a very happy weekend. And I hope my American friends are enjoying their Thanksgiving, and to my Jewish friends, enjoy your 8 crazy days. Okay, guys, have a great night, and I'll see you back here Monday afternoon at 3 p.m. Eastern Time. And remember, it is mass Islamity, and we have to stop the insanity. Good night, everybody.